We are taking another break from the Life of Jesus series. We'll start next week again to talk about Regroup Sunday. One of my favorite books of the Bible in the Hebrew Scriptures, when I say the Hebrew Scriptures, I'm referring to the Old Testament. The Hebrew Scriptures has 39 books. One of my favorite books is the book of Ecclesiastes. How many of you have read Ecclesiastes? Raise your hand. Okay, put your hands down. How many of you like Ecclesiastes? Raise your hand. Okay. How many of you think it's terrible and you're not a big fan? Be honest, raise your hand. Okay, you have one hand. Milos, that's good. I'll take it. Now, here's the thing. Some people feel that way. In the first service, they were a bunch of, they're probably watching online. They weren't as enthusiastic about Ecclesiastes as some of you were. Because it's kind of a downer book. It's 12 chapters long. It's not very long. The guy who's had everything talks about all the things he chased with his money, his wealth, and his fame, and how found almost all the things he chased to be happy in life left him feeling empty, and it felt meaningless. And people think that's kind of depressing, so they don't like the book. I love that for a couple reasons. Number one, I love the reminder that there's a lot of paths that you can take in life that take you to a destination you don't want to arrive at. Just because there's a path in front of you doesn't mean it's a good path. And you want to make sure you're going down doing the right thing. So I love that about the book. But the other thing about the book is that, well, it goes down some dark thought processes. It always emerges on the other side with some big ideas about what does matter in life. You ought to read it for yourself. But in the middle of Ecclesiastes, just one little, that was an infomercial for reading it. One little set of verses that I want to point out today in Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse number 7. We'll start there. He says, I observed yet another example of something meaningless under the sun. Again, this is kind of the tone of the early part of the book. All these meaningless, empty things. What is this? Verse 8. He says, this is the case of a man who is all alone without a child or a brother. Now, in the story, he's referring to a person who's found himself alone. And it's a reminder of the beginning of the Hebrew Scriptures. In Genesis, where God in the creation story said, it is not good that man should be alone. I'll make a companion for him. Now, in the Genesis story, that's the kind of a marriage deal because they needed to bring people together to procreate life and fill the earth and stuff. But this is not about marriage. Not everyone finds that to be an institution that works out for them, or they find it all. But this is about companionship. This is the case of a man who is all alone. He has no spouse. He has no child. He has no brother. He has nobody. It says, yet he works hard to gain as much wealth as he can. So this is a driven man. He works hard. He's type A. He accomplishes things. He achieves. He climbs the ladder. He has lots of money. But then he asks himself, who am I working for? Who am I working for? Why am I giving up so much pleasure now? Here's what he's saying. He's getting that spot where he has deferred pleasure. He has what we call delayed gratification, which is a great way to live for the most part. But like any good thing, could be taken to an extreme. He's in the delaying so long that he's gotten to the end where he realizes, when I thought I could stop and enjoy myself, I'm out of time. Or when I thought I could save enough money to start enjoying it, my energy levels aren't what they used to be, and I can't even use it all. I'm going to die with extra now because I waited too long. And I deferred all this pleasure. And for what and for whom? There's nobody to give it to. There's no one to share it with. I have nobody. And he's sad by it. And the author says this. He says, it is all so meaningless and depressing. It's all so meaningless and depressing. He said, well, that is depressing, Arlen. I know. But here's what the author is trying to say. He's reminding us that life is better when you live for someone else. Life is better when you live for someone else. When your efforts and your energies are spent so it's not just for you, but for somebody you're doing it with and for and taking care of and providing. It's just better that way. He continues in verse number 9. He says, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. This is a verse that's often used in weddings. It's often used in wedding programs or religious gatherings like that sometimes. This verse and the next one. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. Verse 10 says this, if one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. So I have a personal illustration from our family of this, extended family of this truth right here. My wife's dad, my father-in-law, he's an amazing man. He's a pastor, and he's more of an introverted personality, but he's a very big heart. He's just one of the most, I love him to death, one of the most important people in our lives. And my father-in-law, several years ago when he was about 70 years of age, wanted to go backpacking and hike part of the Appalachian Trail. Now, that sounds ambitious at that age. This is my father-in-law. He's in his upper 70s now. He still goes to the gym several times a week. He still runs. He still exercises. He's an incredible person. But he was wanting to go, and it's a heavy, steep, tough excursion to take, but he wanted to do it. Now, if you're not familiar with the Appalachian Trail, it's a mountain range. It's a trail across a mountain range that runs from Georgia all the way up to Maine. And the trail is pretty crazy, but it goes all the way through there. And people who try to tackle it all at once, who have the time and the means to do it all at once, find that it is about a 6 month or longer excursion to hike it all. It could be longer depending on your physical conditioning or whatever, but it's a long trek. Some people will go to one end or the other and start it and go for a number of days or weeks even, and then they'll stop at some point because they got to go back home to work and to life. They'll come back to where they left off and start where they left off and then do it in chunks until eventually they do the whole thing over time. But people like to hike the trail. My father-in-law wanted to start it and at least see what he thought of that, but he wanted to do it alone. His point was this. He's a bit of an introvert, though he's a pastor. Good man. And I don't know why he wanted to do it alone. I'm not an introvert. I understand, though, in my profession, always having to be on all the time for people, and maybe wanting to get away and having a little bit of a spiritual alone time and a discovery time. I can get that. I can totally relate. But he probably even more so wanted to make this an experience that he enjoyed. So he went down to Georgia by himself. Now, when you first start the south end of the Appalachian Trail, you have to hike up from the parking lot where you're dropped off or where you park. You got to hike up Springer Mountain. And so it's a pretty big excursion with that backpack and everything just to get to the top to start the Appalachian Trail. But you start tired, you know. He gets to the top. Now, what a lot of people do is when you get to the top of that entrance, you're actually 1 mile into the official trail already. Some people take their backpacks off and they put them down and they'll walk that mile backwards and then come back so they can say they did the entire trail. But then you go from there and further. And so he gets his backpack and he's hiking and, you know, his first day, and I can't forget if he made it one night or if it was that same evening, but like a day or less in, he calls his wife, my mother-in-law, and he calls her and he says, I can't do it. I'm coming home. It's too much. He turns around and walks back to that same part of the trail he's already done that beat him up, go back and heads home. And that had to be so discouraging for him, right? I mean, he's accomplished. He's something else, but it was too much. He went back home, no doubt very discouraged, but he didn't quit. He reached out to his two sons, and to me, his son-in-law. He has another son-in-law who was too busy with work and he couldn't do it. But the three of us who could, he says, would you come with me a year from now? I want to try that again and hike a little part of the Appalachian, some miles of the Appalachian Trail. Would you come with me? And we all said yes, for all the reasons. I love hiking and backpacking and tent camping. Also, yes, I'll go with my 70-year-old father-in-law on that mountain trail. So we all went down there. And I had to buy the gear. If you've ever gone backpacking, the packs they have, you can put a lot of weight in there, so they have you carry backpacks that are built to sit on around, not just on your shoulders, but around your waist, pretty tightly well-built, so that you're carrying the bulk of the weight on your midsection instead of on your shoulders and your traps, because that will break your back down. So they're built to be carrying, but you still have to carry the weight. It's still heavy, but it's just carried better. You got to get, individual tents. You're buying lightweight everything, any lightweight things you're going to sleep, bags, little pillows that you can inflate, anything as light as possible, food for several days. You're bringing, all the things you need as light as possible, but as much as you need. So we all pay. I went to every count, you know, every horse preserve, Good Now, many miles in Good Now, and Stony Run and other places, and just walked with this pack on and trained and prepared. And then when the time was right, in October of 2020, we drove down together, the four of us, to Georgia, and we parked and we hiked back up. Actually, we parked on a far destination in faith, and we got a ride back, and we started at Springer Mountain, hiked up, went back that first mile, and we began to hike the Appalachian Trail. Now, I'm already taking a lot of time. I'm going to take some more time to say, if anyone here, if that piques your interest and you're interested in hiking, my advice is skip the Appalachian Trail. Just don't even. It's not that great. You say, well, I want to do a long accomplishment. I'll give you some advice on that. But let me just say, the Appalachian Trail is not, I love this kind of stuff. The Appalachian Trail is overrated in my opinion. Here's why. You're walking up and down. It's a lot of elevation, first of all, so it's hard work. It's up and down and up and down the whole time. And so it's down is hard on your knees, up is hard on your everything. But it's not even scenic. It's like walking through the woods around here for scenery, except for with all the extra up and down. And once every so many miles, you come to a great lookout spot. The problem is if it's a great lookout spot, people know about it, and folks who don't want to go backpacking park at a closer spot where they can get to it, and they park and they find a shorter path to walk without all the gear. So as you're drudging away, sweating and gross in those clothes and your backpack on, and you get close to the good stuff, people start showing up, and they're wearing their cashmere sweaters tied around their neck, with their coach purse and their foofy dog sitting inside. Like, oh, look, it's a beautiful scenery. And you're like, "Arr." And then they leave, and then you're down in the hard part. It's not even scenic. I'm telling you, my opinion, go somewhere else. You're like, well, Arlen, I want to do a whole thing like the Appalachian Trail. My advice would be go to the West Coast, the Pacific Trail that goes from Mexico to Canada is also very hard, much more visually rewarding throughout. But you can go to national parks like Glacier and others and find multiple day backpacking trips. I recommend you try it somewhere besides the Appalachian. I'm not saying it wasn't rewarding. It was a rewarding experience. We went 6 days with my father-in-law, 5 nights, setting up our camp, throwing our stuff in a bear box or over a tree with a rope off the long limb, and sleeping out in tents. For 6 days, we hiked about 61 or so miles of the Appalachian Trail. And it was quite an accomplishment to do, as an experience I will treasure for the rest of my life. Now, why was my father-in-law unable to go for a day, and a whole year later in his life, at the age of 70, he's able to go for 6 days and 61 miles? What was the difference? Yes, he wasn't doing it alone, right? A couple things help when you're with people. For one, you can share some weight. There's certain weight that everyone carries. You're sleeping in a tent and blankets or whatever, your clothes, your food. But there's certain items that you don't need four of them if there's four of you going. You need a shovel. I won't explain why, but you need a shovel. And you need other certain items. Maybe you have to warm up water for cooking one of those pockets of meals over dinner, or coffee if you like that, or other things. But you know, you don't need four of everything. So you can share certain items, and all of a sudden, one person by themselves has to carry all of that. Four people spread it out. Now, it's still heavy. It's still over 30 pounds on each person's back. But it's not as much because you're sharing some items. Also, we encourage each other. We stop for snacks along the way. We talk about the journey. We enjoy the sights. We share the load. I fell at one point in the trail. It's easy to do. We're there for each other. No one's alone. And so my point is that, it was so much easier to go further when you're not going alone. The wise man in Ecclesiastes said this: two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If the one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Not only did I say earlier that life is better when you live for someone else, but I also want to say this: life is better when you share it with someone else, right? That's the intention, that God made us for relationship. First and foremost with him, but also with each other. It's not good that we would be alone. Life is better when you share it with someone else. Now, I'll keep reading in verse number 11. He says, likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm, but how can one be warm alone? I don't think that needs any commentary, so I'm just going to keep moving. Okay? Verse 12, a person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. If you're by yourself and a bunch of people attack you, you can't. They surround you. You might get sucker punched in your blind spot. But if two people back to back can keep each other protected and safe, perhaps, right? Because they can watch out for each other. And what he's saying over and over again, if you're following along, he's saying two people are better than one. But then in verse 12, he also says this. He says three are even better. Now, that is not a marriage principle, once again. Okay. He's not talking about that. I said that earlier. I better sure say it now. No, three are even better, he says, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. A triple braided cord is not easily broken. Now, that's what a rope really is, ultimately. The fact that the rope I gave you, if you want to look at it with me, it is three cords. We'll talk about what each cord is in a minute here, braided together. If you see a giant rope like on a tire swing, right, you might see three braids of cord wrapped together in a rope. But when you break down the rope, I want you to, if you want to open up, and you don't have to do this if you don't want to mess your thing up, but there are actually three braids in here, three cords or three braids, and I'm going to separate mine so you can see them here, okay? That bind together to make the rope. But if you look closer at each of those braids in your rope, what do you have? You have a bunch of strands that make up each braid, right? You can go to this one strand. I can see there are probably, oh my goodness, dozens of strands in that one braid. And as we saw earlier with Darlene and Steve, you can pull that one strand by itself. You can break that thing, can't you? You may break a couple of them together. But you put a bunch of them together, and then you braid that cord or those strands with other strands. It becomes pretty hard. This is pretty hard to break. This rope can hold a lot of weight for its size. You'd be surprised. You know what a rope really is, if I can be simple? It is braided strands of braided strands. Right? Braided strands of braided strands. Now here's what I'm trying to say to us today. A threefold cord, triple braided cord, not easily broken. The author is telling us that just as it isn't good to be alone, it's also not best to have only one type of community. So I'm not alone, I have somebody. Great, that's community. Who else? What else? Well, that's all I need. I don't need anybody. But he says two is better than one. Three is better than two. The idea goes on beyond three, that there is strength in numbers. That when we get together and our strands become a group and our groups become part of other things and we all bind together, boy, it's hard to break that. It's just about impossible. Different types of community as God intended. You and I have different types of community in our lives. You may have a spouse or a life partner. That's a wonderful gift. Now, some people don't have that. You never found a spouse. Maybe you wanted that and you prayed for it and it hasn't worked out yet and you still maybe hope or you've given up hope. Some people, maybe you found somebody and you thought it was the dream and it turned out to be a nightmare and then it didn't last. And then you're thinking, I don't ever want to do that again. Or maybe I do want to do that again, but I'll find someone better. And you hope you will. But two people who come together who are healthy people in a union, oh, it's a treasure. One of the best treasures of my life is my marriage. I'm blessed to have a very good one. Michelle's awesome. I found my person. When you find your person, it's pretty cool. That's one type of community. But you know, you serve each other. You sacrifice for each other. You defer to each other. But it's worth it. Having kids. Not everyone's able to have kids. Maybe they want to. But I'll tell you, some people adopt or foster if they can. But kids, more work, more serving, more sacrifice, more deferring. But boy, it adds layers to your life that are rich. It's community. You could be with your coworkers that you work with many hours a day. Could be, if you're a forward-facing business, could be your customers that you get to build relationship with. Friends that share a life with you that maybe you've known since you were young and you've grown up together and you stay in touch. Or they share similar interests and hobbies than you, so you have a gaming group or a sports group or a hobbyist group because of interest. So many ways to find community. One that brings us all together here today is church. Church is the big idea of Jesus, and church is all built around the idea of community. It's a bunch of people who have their own communities, maybe in their own houses even, or maybe in other ways, finding community around faith. It's another form of community that we braid into our lives. Here's the thing. Church is a good example of the diversity. Our church is full of very different people. We're different in our faith journey, aren't we? Let me talk about church for a few minutes here, okay? We're different in our background. We have people in our church who, you know, you're not even sure you believe yet. You're like, I'm kind of skeptical. I'm considering it, but I'm showing up to listen. There are people who are new to faith and believing, but they're like, I have a lot of room to grow. There are folks who've been around for a while, believing for a while, but you're still growing because we should never stop growing, right? We should be lifelong learners. There are people who maybe you've been around for a while and maybe you're even falling away or out of faith or out of the faith community because of things that have happened that have hurt you or things that have happened along the way and it's understandable how it can derail us. But we all show up wherever we are in that journey with one thing in common. We're leaning in saying, God, I'm listening. What do you have for me? Who are you? What do you want for me? We have different kinds of backgrounds with church, right? Some people, this is your first church ever. Your first church experience is this one. Like, oh, this is how church works. Others, you came from a time in your past where you have a sweet spot in your past. Maybe when you were a child, maybe when you were a young adult or a new couple, and it's the time that you found faith and that was the sweet spot in your faith journey. That church was the standard that you flourished in, so it's the standard by which you hold all other future churches against. That was the wonderful one. And nothing ever is going to ever measure up to that fully, but that was where you found what you, I think, is ideal in your soul. And we all have different experiences like that. Some people have different denominational backgrounds. What church should do? Why does the church not do this? What does the church do that? I don't understand that. My traditions don't do those things. It's different. Some people get really dogmatic about how they think church ought to be done, and people get really dogmatic and they struggle to assimilate into a church body because they're always upset about things. But we learn that we're all different. But we come under one umbrella. Our politics are different. Not in every church. Sometimes they're very uniform. Our church is very diverse politically. I love that. One of my favorite things about our church, because it tells me that our church is not centered around the wrong topics. We know what we're focused on, and it's not that. It's Jesus. We're diverse in how we raise our families, our social aspects, our personalities. But we all come together under one idea, and that is that we come and say, God, are you there? Do you care? And what do you have for my life? What's my purpose? What's the meaning? I'm listening. We're leaning in. And that's the one thing, maybe there's many things that make us similar, but if nothing else, that one thing is a common thread. And it brings us into a community with each other. And some people struggle and say, I don't like to be in community with people who I don't agree with or who are different than me. It bothers me. And I'm always like, why? All people irritate me when they see things differently than me. They irritate me when they have different views. They have different personalities that I wouldn't act like that. It irks me. It's irksome. And I'm always like, why? Can I give us a reminder today? If the world was full of clones of you, it would be a boring world and you would be bored. You wouldn't find romantic love. That would be boring. You want someone who's a bit different. You wouldn't find, I'm sure you and your spouse agree on everything, don't you? And you're just alike. You wouldn't find good friendships. You get very bored. Variety is the spice of life. And I know that some people get irritated because, but I don't think that they're right about that. I don't think they see that, or they act weird. And I'm like, why do we get irritated? I know why. Scientifically, we have neural pathways in our brain. And when we see something that's different than us or people that are different than us, we can go one of two ways. We can go down the path of saying, that bothers me and that irks me and I'm gonna be critical and frustrated. And I think our culture and our online withdrawal culture and our opinionated social media culture has trained us to be so hypercritical of everything that we don't align with. And it's a pathway with our brains. But there's another pathway that you can choose to take. And if you're taking the wrong one, it takes a little more to undo it because it's hard to break habits. But it's like flipping a switch where instead of being irritated by people who are different, act different, think different, you look at them and you say, huh, instead of being irritated, I'm going to be curious. I'm going to say there's a lot of Skittles in the bowl, a lot of different flavors of Skittles in the bowl, right? That's cool. And maybe I can learn about you, and maybe I can even learn from you, and maybe you can learn about me and from me, and maybe we can just enjoy life because I'm curious rather than irritated. And I'm warning you that if you don't fight that narrow pathway the right direction and you let it go, the irritated wall yourself off from people, hypercritical, if you don't figure that out, you'll end up growing up to be one of those old men yelling at the clouds. Get off my lawn! Because it's a choice in life to stay be irritated or be curious. And we're made for community with each other. And church is a community. And by the way, church is a community that has communities within the community. There's sub-communities. So always get along and think, lots of things we do and programs, ways we serve and Sunday school classes and growth groups and discipleship you can do one-on-one with people and relationships and networks and think programs, and there's so many ways. In fact, our church has what we're not going to go over this today for sake of time, but we have a mission statement and a vision statement and a strategy that we've taught before. I was going to do it today, but I practiced the message and realized I have no time because we wanted to play around a little bit today. So I decided not to do it today, but sometime we'll do it. We need to do it. This long Jesus series has kept me from keeping that in front of us more, and I need to do it more intentionally from time to time. But skipping all of that, kind of our strategy, we've chosen five words that we operate by as a church strategically in-house for so many things. And I'll put those words on the screen. They are gather, connect, serve, invite, give. This is not our mission or our vision statement. This is just a vein of thinking about why we do what we do and how we do what we do. And I can spend 20 minutes enthusiastically explaining how this helps us in so many organizational ways that I can glow about the wisdom of this because I believe in it. But for practical purposes, these are five words that we gathered from the scripture. After the life of Jesus is over, and we're going to get here. After the life of Jesus, when the early church starts after he left, in the very earliest part of the book of Acts, these five ideas emerge in the early church. So they're scriptural. And all of them are about community. Gathering for us, without getting into the weeds, gathering for us is what we're doing right now. It's Sunday morning, worshiping, hearing God's word. This is gathering. And I don't have to promote that. You're already here. Connecting is groups and such. I'll talk about that in just a minute here. Serving, but all of that is community. Gathering is community. Connecting in groups is community. Serving, you're serving with other people, building community. Serving other people, being community. Inviting is inviting people into faith and into church to hear about Christ, and that's inviting people into community. Giving allows us to not just be on our own in what we do generously, but to come together with synergy and create a community for people, including ourselves, to thrive in the Lord Jesus Christ. And all of these are biblical ideas built around the idea of Christ for the church to be community-minded. And today, I want to just talk about connecting a little bit. There's a lot of ways we connect, but one of the big driving forces that we want to always promote at Lighthouse Church is small groups or life groups or lighthouse groups, or just groups. Our groups our chance to connect. Now, when we built groups, we built our group's idea with two important criteria to distinguish, to help us know what we're trying to do. The first rule about our small groups are that they would not be groups that meet on Sundays. They would be groups that meet during the week. It could be a Monday evening, it could be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, during the day or the evening. And there's a reason why we say a different day than other than Sunday. The reason we do that for our groups is because I grew up in a very traditional Baptist church, I could tell you. We used to have Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday night. By the time you got to your work week on Monday morning, you were already tired. I need a break from the weekend. And when you're retired and older, that's fine. You're looking for more community. But some of the people, young families, you're just like, oh my goodness, I can't hardly keep up with it all. And honestly, then you're like, what do we take home on Sunday? Well, which message do I remember? There's so many different things I heard. So we decided Sundays can be about one important direction. We have two identical services, 9 o'clock and 10:45, and we aim the same message to give you a truth that we believe will help you live your life more in tune with Christ, that will help you grow. That's our goal every week. Take that home with you from Sunday to Sunday. But then during the week sometime to be able to get together and get out of rows like we do on Sundays and get into circles and grow a different way as you study these things and as you talk and do life together. And circles are powerful. It's kind of like going home as a family. You can sit on the couch for dinner, get your food, sit on the couch and watch a movie together. And honestly, that's kind of fun to do sometimes. It's easy. Or a little more effort, you can sit around the table sometimes, put your devices down and talk and say, how was your day? What's new? How are you doing? And that builds a different kind of relationship and reward. And when you come to church, we can come and we sit in rows and enjoy this idea that God ordained and intended and it has its purpose. But when we can come back and get in the circles and build some community, people who are different than us, different flavors of Skittles, share some life a little bit, learn about each other, learn about God, grow, enjoy, be curious, encourage, strengthen, help, shepherd each other. Connecting is powerful. So that's the first rule, is this not on Sundays. The second rule for small groups is that we want them to be a certain size. Our group model has been built on the idea that they should be between 8 to 10 people, or if it's a couples group, 5 to 6 couples. And that's not just some arbitrary number we made up, that was intentional. We did that because we believed that with the science. First of all, if a group's smaller than that, it gets difficult because if it loses a couple people along the way to attrition, and then other people miss a certain week and then get so small, they'll just keep canceling the group because people aren't showing up. But if you have enough people to where some people drop off or whatever, and there's still a few people, they can get together on those down weeks and still have a good meeting, maybe even a more intimate meeting occasionally. So you want it to be big enough to withstand some of that ebbs and flows. But we've also learned that research has shown that too big, and there's a drop off in return on investment. That on the other side of this thing, it's already tricky in even a group that size where there's that one, some people are just introvert, want to not talk, kind of sit back and just, you know, and you always want to kind of, that's fine, but you also want to kind of pull, make sure they feel included. There's others who can dominate and talk, overshare and be dominant, major talker. You always want to kind of balance that out as a group leader because it can falter. But the truth is that the more you get past a certain number, there's a loss of return on investment with size. And so you want it to be just, so everything's intentional. So 8 to 10 people or 5 to 6 couples, and then, of course, during the week. And we try to do that through the years. And I want to just mention a couple, and then we're going to move on and be done with that in a minute here. We have a couple groups that meet. We actually have a couple that are already at capacity. We have a couple that have some space, and I want to mention to you in case you're interested in getting in a group as another form of community in your life. Real quick here. First of all, I want to mention we have a couple of groups that are full. One is a group that I started a few years ago. I'm going to share them anyhow. A few years ago, I started a group that was a foundations class, and then we kind of turned it into a little something different. We turned it into a skeptics class. We read skeptical ideas and challenging things, and we went. A lot of people don't like to go and consider ideas contrary to our favorite, so we liked to. It was kind of really fun, and then we moved it into kind of being a book club, and I kind of stayed longer than I meant to with it, but then eventually handed that group off, and Patty McStudian took it over. She's out of town today. She took it over and is doing a tremendous job. I love that group, and I love everyone in it. It's a great bunch. They're honestly full. They're at capacity. They're actually above capacity. In fact, I talked to Patty several times about eventually, you know, finding another group leader, maybe does a group divide 50-50, 25-75, or does it just have someone break off and start a different group because we want to follow the model we intentionally build. But that group is full. It meets on Wednesday nights. It's going through Galatians this fall, and I want you to know it exists. So another group that's already full that we started just recently, Michelle and Keith Cowling, my friends who were here last week. Michelle started a group in her house with a few of her friends and then a few ladies she brought Michelle in. And as soon as we got the word out, it filled so fast. And Michelle's been very strict of saying, this is our number. We're going to stay within the number. We can probably double it, but we're just going to have this many people only for the reasons I mentioned earlier. And it got to that number pretty quickly, so it was already capped before we even got a chance to talk about it. But it's a group that meets every other Wednesday at Michelle's house, starting soon. Now, I'm pointing this out for this reason. We have some groups. But we have a couple groups that have some space. We have a men's group that meets on Monday evenings every other week. And Miguel, who's running one of our grills today for the cookout, Miguel's the group leader. They started in the spring, ran for a while, handful of men, took the summer off. They're starting to make up every other Monday starting September 21st. He's doing a great job. There's a sign-up sheet on the table in the lobby for that group if you're a man and want to be involved. If you have questions, you can see Miguel during the burger bash. He'll be glad to answer questions for you. And we recommend that. Hi, they're going through a topic called slaying the giants in your life right now. And I think it'd be a great topic for many men to be a part of. And then I'm going to make one more. I'm starting a group of my own again. And it's going to be on Thursday evenings, twice a month, on the first and third Thursdays of the month, in conjunction with the youth group time. Not part of youth group, we're separate place, but during youth group time, on the first and third Thursdays of the month, from 6:30 to 8:30. And my group is not for everybody. In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, you probably, maybe you should not come to my group. I'm serious. If you are looking for a Bible study group, theologically robust, don't come to my group. I do that every Sunday with you. I don't think I have to prove that I can get deep in the Word, and we're being faithful to the Scriptures all the time. I do that my whole life. This group is different. If that's what you're looking for, I'm not your group. It's not the skeptics group from a few years ago either, but it's going to be different. And I don't have time to pitch my commercial right now for sake of time. I do have a sign-up sheet out front, and I'm here for the next couple hours for the Burger Bash. Come talk to me if you're interested. I'll be glad to tell you all the deets. But it's really a group for men or women who are growth-minded people in life. We can come and be learners together and encourage and support and hold each other accountable and be a part of something special. It's a very unusual kind of group, but I have other parts of my life than just this. So if you want a community around something that's not typical, talk to me afterwards. There's a sign-up sheet for more information. Maybe I'll give you more details on a different Sunday, not today. We've got to keep moving here. The point is, gather, connect, serve, invite, give, five words we use to help us follow the early church Book of Acts model of how a church creates community. Not because church is a community and communities within communities, but not the only community. There's other kinds of community in your life, which is what a rope is. Braided strands of braided strands. We want you to find community in many different ways, including your faith journey. Now, I wanted to give you some great statement to close off my message with. You know, the kind I do sometimes, a summary statement, a sticky statement, an action step that you would say, man, that was good and seriously thought out. But I struggled. And all I could come up with was this. Be a rope, not a dope. Hey, come on now. You try it sometime. It's not as easy as it sounds, okay? Be a rope, not a dope. Okay, here's what I'm saying. We want you to find a people that you add to your life because here's the thing. We're better together. God intended it that way. We're not walking through life alone. Now, if you say, well, you mentioned the groups, but not one that can pertain to my schedule or timing or interest or demographic. If you come see me, we have enough people gather around for one a group that we aren't meeting. You come see me. We can throw I just got to find a leader and a topic and enough people. We'll put any group together. We'll start next week. You know what I'm saying? Just talk to us. We're trying to meet needs, but we have to have the opportunities. But be a rope, not a dope. Okay, so here's the thing. Here's what I want to say, and this will be my closing, and I want to make this clear. Just like this rope is braided strands of braided strands, it's strong when it's together. If you try to pull this apart, Darlene and Steve can testify. We even get to this one. It ain't going to happen. In fact, this rope right here in its long form, you can dangle from it with all your body weight. You're not going to break this thing. This is a very strong rope. You know how you break this rope? You don't do it that way. One of the best ways for you to break this rope is to take the cords apart and pull the strands apart from the cord. If you pull the strands apart from it, you can take each, as you were trying to do earlier, you take each strand, and as we saw earlier, you can break each strand once you pull them apart. But when they're together, you can't do it. I'm going to tell you, my small group I'm starting in a couple of weeks, which by the way will be, first meeting is going to be set the 17th of September, not to plug it, but here's the thing. My group, my theme Bible verse for that group is relevant to what I'm saying. My theme verse for that group is John 10:10. It says, the thief comes to kill and steal and destroy. But Jesus says, my purpose is to give you a rich and satisfying life or an abundant life. That second part is the key for my group. But the first part's the key for today. The thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. You know how the enemy's going to destroy you? He's not going to be able to break you in your community as easily. But he can isolate us apart. If he can pull us apart, if he can isolate you, that's where we're vulnerable. That's why he wants to pick you at your marriage. If he can pick the two of you apart, you're vulnerable. So he wants to pick apart your family and isolate you away from everybody else and cut people off. We're danger when we're alone. So he wants to get our nation dividing against each other and fighting as we're more susceptible when we're apart. So he wants to get our churches full of people who are bickering with each other and people who are fighting over things that they don't align on me, or not liking people because they're different than us. Because the more we can isolate ourselves from others because they irritate us or wall ourselves off because we're afraid to be vulnerable, each strand is easy to break. But together, there's strength. Two are better than one. If one falls, the others are to help them up. Three is even better. A triple braided cord is not easily broken. So, well, the enemy would love to isolate you, love to get you alone on a steep mountain somewhere. Try to hike it by yourself. Don't do this journey alone. Find community. We're better together.